Ask the MP. Ask the Right Honorable is in the hot seat. Ask the MP, ask the MP. With Farai on ZFM Stereo.
Welcome to Ask the MP. My name is Perfect Hlongwane. Welcome to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. For those who want to be part of the program, in Harare, you can get us on 106.4, Mutare 95.4, Mashingo 96.1, Victoria Falls 106.5, and those in Chivu 99.8, and in Beitbridge 106.1. Tonight on the program, I'm standing in for Farai Makutuya. This is Ask the MP. And remember, the program is brought to you in conjunction with the Southern African Parliamentary Support Trust. Apo tiri kutarisa nasi nyaya zineche kuita ni parliament. Today or tonight on the program, I have in the studio from Southern African Parliamentary Support Trust, Mr. Philip Muziri. He is the program advisor from that organization. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, Zimbabwe.
Yes, and I have also in the studio Agency Gumbo. He is a legal practitioner, local legal practitioner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, as we start, let me begin with Mr. Muziri. But before I ask you that question, let me also remind our listeners that those who want to be part of this program, either by sending in questions, comments, you are free to do so on our WhatsApp number, which is 0731-168-045. We know that the 9th Parliament has been sworn in. Members from various constituencies have taken their oath, and they will be starting Basarawo today kwa kunema elections at Parliament Building, where the Speaker of the National Assembly was elected. And we will be talking about all those issues in tonight's program. And regaindi vendatanga nemi ba Muziri, what is the role of Parliament, that is both the National Assembly and Senate? And also give us a brief breakdown of the composition of Parliament, especially the 9th Parliament.
Thank you very much. In terms of the roles and functions, Parliament traditionally has three roles, which are the lawmaking function or the legislative function, the representative function, as well as the executive oversight. And in respect of the legislative function, it is the role of Parliament to make laws. And in respect of the executive oversight, it is Parliament that oversees and supervises how the executive implements its policies, insofar as they are the subject of parliamentary oversight. Then in terms of the representative function, members of Parliament in their individual and collective capacity represent their constituents, represent those that voted them into office, those that did not vote, and those that voted against them in legislative elections. So they play a critical function in that regard. Mm-hmm. In terms of the breakdown, the National Assembly has 270 members. That is the 210 members that are elected directly by constituents. Then you have the 60 women in this particular parliament to make them 270 parliament. But this is the last parliament in terms of the 2013 constitution in which we have those 60 additional women who were meant to balance the gender dimension of parliament. The Senate has 80 members elected by proportional representation. That is the 60 that are elected by proportional representation, plus the 16 traditional leaders, as well as the two members representing those with disability, and the leadership of the House, that is the President of the Senate and the Deputy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Agency, let's come to you. We want to look at the role of Parliament, both the lower and the upper house, Agamira say, from a legal point of view?
Well, I think one of the most fundamental roles of parliament, you know, we can only realize it through looking at the constitution itself. Parliament, the legislature is established in terms of chapter 6 of the constitution, 116, chapter section 116 117, mm-hmm. and the role is also clearly enunciated in that particular section, and it is to protect and safeguard the constitution. So the most fundamental role that every parliamentarian carries is that of protecting the constitution of the land, and also maintaining, putting together laws that maintain the peace and order and security of the nation. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as my brother here has indicated, he has also made mention of their role as an oversight institution. The constitution also makes it very clear that every government agency is accountable to parliament, and as a result, parliament should be seen acting as an oversight for every parastatal and every commission that we have in the country. And mm-hmm. we saw some of these roles being taken into action in the 8th Parliament, where, you know, the Parliamentary Portfolio Committees took most parastatals and most ministers and even, you know, several people who are in high levels of authority to task about their actions and to task about even how they conducted themselves during the course and term of their office.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the 8th Parliament Agency, what would you say are the major achievements, and probably also touch on the impediments of the 8th Parliament?
Okay, I will say the first thing that we have to also consider is their major mandate as the 8th Parliament. And their major mandate was that of aligning the laws to the new constitution, or rather the 2013 constitution. Mm-hmm. And as such, if we are to measure their success, we have to measure it with regards how much of these laws were amended and aligned to the constitution. And I've got to say that as a legal practitioner, there is a commendable effort on their part in as far as the quantity of amendments they managed to successfully put in place. Mm-hmm. Yes, we know over 75% of the statutes that required amendment have been amended. Though, yes, there were some impediments in that regard, because, I mean, it took an abnormally long time for us to be where we are today in as far as alignment is concerned. More could have been done by the 8th Parliament in as far as ensuring that every piece of law, every piece of legislation in this country is within the bounds of the Constitution of Zimbabwe. I'll talk of an impediment quickly here that is with regards to their oversight role and oversight duty. Mm-hmm. You realize that there were major complaints that were registered by the public and also by parliamentarians, mm-hmm. with regards to the attendance of ministers in parliament.
Yes.
You realize that it also affects the oversight role of parliament, because it is these government ministers who are supposed to come and give feedback to parliament with regards to certain policy issues in their respective ministries. And in the 8th Parliament, we know our ministers were notorious for not attending parliament for one reason or the other. And it is our hope also as the public that in this coming parliament, ministers understand that when they come to parliament, they are coming to Zimbabwe. When they come to talk to our parliamentarians, they are talking to us, the citizens, who are being represented by the said parliamentarians. So I think that was a major impediment, and I think government should look into that and work into that. Parliament should be able to enforce the attendance of ministers.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Muziri, let's also focus on the 8th Parliament, the achievements, and but of particular interest in your portfolio committees that he raises. Could the 8th Parliament yakaita a lot of noise insofar as my committees are concerned, vachita bring before them my high level officials? Mm-hmm. What do you think needs to be done to make sure that, because in the 8th Parliament we saw, for instance, my ministers who did not turn up when they were summoned. What do you think needs to be done to make sure that the committees have teeth?
Okay. The committees do actually have teeth because Parliament has the same powers as a court in implementing its rules. So even with regard to the last parliament, They could have dealt with those ministers that were banking parliament, because the constitution actually enjoins ministers to attend parliament. It's part of the constitution, and the rules of parliament, the standing orders, also make provision to actually enforce the powers of parliament to compel people to appear before it, be they government ministers or members of the public, because parliament can enforce its rules. What it will need to then do is to ensure that its rules are obeyed by all people that are subject to it, because the constitution says all government agencies at every level are subject to the powers of parliament, and that includes government ministers. So parliament can actually enforce its rules, and it has previously sent some of its membership to prison just to demonstrate that it has that kind of compelling power.
Yeah, save that the 8th Parliament did not do that. Is it an indication that there was compliance?
Not necessarily, because we actually saw some government ministers, literally thumbing the nose of parliament and with some level of impunity, and parliament can in fact set up privileges committees in order to investigate where members of the public or government officials refuse or decline to abide by its instructions, and this it may not have done in the last parliament, but we hope that it will be able to discharge this power in order to ensure that the respect that the institution is held by members of the public is not undermined by those that it is supposed to preside over.
Agency, Inyamazino EMA committees, what do you think should be done? Why is it that we did not see the 8th Parliament take my ministers who went against what they were saying to court, for instance?
Well, I think there is need to fix the balance of priorities in our country, in as far as politics and the constitution is concerned, because in as far as parliament and its various committees having teeth, I will tell you that as what is constitutionally provided and what is there within the rules of procedure and the like of parliament, parliament can actually do, like what my learned brother here was saying, parliament can actually take certain punitive measures against its members. But we also now have a challenge where our politicians and our parliamentarians consider their party position more than they consider the importance and significance of the constitution. As long as we uphold our various parties and principles, it becomes very difficult to understand how the effectiveness of the constitution of the country. I will tell you this one thing: if a parliamentary portfolio committee endears itself towards protecting the constitution and endears itself towards maintaining the law and the rule of law in the country, it becomes easy for them to say, regardless of who is seated in front of us and regardless of who we are interrogating or investigating, the agenda and the goal is to satisfy the demands and the needs of the constitution. So now you have a challenge where the chairperson of the parliamentary portfolio committee is probably investigating his secretary for legal affairs from his I'm just saying it as an example. Or he's probably, interrogating and investigating his vice president from his political party. So it becomes very difficult for them, because they are more loyal to their party structure and hierarchy than they are loyal to the constitution. So the advice, if we are to give any to this coming parliament, to the 9th parliament, is that know that when you sit in parliament and you're a parliamentarian, you are there to represent, number one, the people of Zimbabwe, and most importantly, to protect the constitution. So your boss before the chief whip, your boss before the speaker of parliament, your boss before whoever you report to in your party structure, when you are in parliament, your boss is the constitution. And your major role should be to protect that constitution, even if it means exposing your boss as corruption or exposing your boss to even imprisonment.
Ask the MP is the program, and we are live from Newlands, where we have Mr. Philip Muziri, a program advisor from Southern African Parliamentary Support Trust. And remember, this program is brought to you in conjunction with Southern African Parliamentary Support Trust. And also, we have in the studio lawyer Agency Gumbo, where we are discussing expectations for the 9th Parliament. You are free to call in, you're free to send in your WhatsApp comments, questions, on WhatsApp number 0731 168 045. Kuti munge muchiti pao ma expectations amwina on the 9th Parliament ya mkava kugatwa mazwa mashumanene apfura. Now Mr. Muziri, Advocate Mudenda, he has been retained as the Speaker of the National Assembly. What is your comment? He will be there until 2023, right?
Yes.
What's your comment on that?
Well, Advocate Mudenda has been in that role in the past 5 years.
Yes.
So over that period, he has gained a lot of experience in handling the affairs of Parliament. He has seen a lot of work done. He has been a very effective speaker. He is respected across the political divide,
yeah,
and that is important. And I think there's a lot of work that the 8th Parliament had started to realign a number of statutes to the Constitution, which my learned friend made reference to, and which has not yet been completed. And
yeah,
Advocate Mudenda was on record as, you know, encouraging stakeholders to actually bring before Parliament and to make submissions that related to the alignment of several statutes to the Constitution. So I think he has a lot on his plate, and he has an opportunity to carry forward the projects that he started that need to be attended and addressed.
But from SAPST, looking at Parliament from a distance, what do you think in terms of alignment Yema laws, do you think the 8th Parliament did well?
Well, I think looking at experiences from other jurisdictions, there may have been a need to actually time frame the process to say that, you know, during, we need to have done so much by such a period. That's what other jurisdictions have done, because there's always a lot of work when you have a new constitution in place. We did not as a country do that. The 2013 constitution did not provide a realignment timetable, and that gave the executive a blank check, because most of our legislation is driven by the executive, and without an enforcement mechanism to ensure that every piece of legislation was addressed within the five-year period, that left some critical pieces of legislation unaddressed. And that also explains a lot of petitions that came to Parliament from other stakeholders, not the executive, which raised a number of issues that they believed could have been addressed by the 8th Parliament but were not addressed by the time that Parliament's term of office came to an end. So I think there's a lot of work before the 9th Parliament to ensure that we do not continue to have realignment as a subject of discussion. We must put it before us, you know, behind, you know, having addressed all those pieces of legislation. Because like my learned friend says, the Constitution is supreme, and Parliament's key role is to ensure that it upholds the Constitution. And if we still have some pieces of legislation that are not yet addressed, it's a blot on the performance of Parliament. I'll take, for instance, the issue of marriages. 2016, we have a constitutional court judgment,
yes,
which said child marriages are unconstitutional and unenforceable. But up to now, 2018, we still have you know, the marriage legal framework unaddressed by Parliament. Mm. So it is not as if Parliament, you know, Zimbabwe has not acceded to international agreements that relate to some of these things. So there's a lot of work. What it means is there's a lot of work before Parliament.
The Ninth Parliament is inheriting chikweret, yes, in terms of aligning my laws.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
So what will be the ideal time frame? Because you're saying we can't really continue to be talking about alignment. We need to be focusing on other things. What will be the ideal time frame for them to say, okay, we have aligned the laws?
The ideal timetable is yesterday, because the constitution says any piece of legislation that is inconsistent with it,
yeah,
is invalid to the extent of the inconsistency.
Yes.
So if we have any laws that are not consistent with the constitution, they are invalid.
Yeah.
And why should they continue to be on our statute books?
Mm-hmm. Agency, who qualifies to be speaker?
Well, this is normally subject to the constitution,
yeah,
which gives us clearly the type of person that must be elected as a speaker of parliament.
Yes.
And I just want to make a quick reference here
to the constitution.
I'm a man,
yeah,
of the law, so I'll make a quick reference here to the constitution.
Uh-huh.
It's section 117.
Okay.
So that we don't speak from our own minds when we have a constitution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you see, I'm asking that question so that we are clear. People may think that it's only those who are elected to as parliamentarians who then are elected as a speaker, mm-hmm, or anyone else is qualified to do that. Whilst he's going to the reference point, let me say that those who are in Kariba, you can get us on 105.3 Baitbridge, 106.1, Mutoreshanga 97.6, and our number for messages, questions, comments, and your expectations for the Ninth Parliament. You can send in your WhatsApp on 0731168045. This is Ask the MP. Yes.
So the Speaker of Parliament is provided for there by Section 126 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Which provides basically for the office of the Speaker of the National Assembly and how he's elected into office.
Yeah.
And when you look at the qualifications that they are expected to have naturally, other than the fact of being voted into by a majority of parliament, there is the element of the capacity to understand legislative procedure.
Yes.
And also understand the procedures of parliament itself. So what that simply then means is that the names that will be forwarded by the various political parties for the Speaker of Parliament are of those of people that have been with parliament before, because they've got to understand how parliamentary, because they are the custodians of parliamentary procedure. They are also the ones who are responsible for adjudicating the discourse and the debates and the various motions that are set forward in parliament. So the one most significant aspect is that they've got to be people that have been with parliament before. It can't be a new parliamentarian, because then it becomes very difficult for them to adjudicate the process of debate in parliament.
Mm-hmm. And now let's focus on the Ninth Parliament and say, what will be your expectations for the Ninth Parliament? Which issues would you want to see top of the agenda in the Ninth Parliament?
Right. So the Ninth Parliament comes in at a time where Zimbabwe is going through a serious economic crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It comes in at a time where there is significant need for Zimbabwe to re-engage itself with the partners that it had lost in the past, mm-hmm, for purposes of advancing the economic development agenda of the country. So they are burdened with the need of ensuring the existence of laws that secure investment in the country, that guarantee free market trades in the country, and also ensuring that the Company Act itself is amended independent, and it also abides to internationally recognized standards. So this is their major issue. I think the economy is going to be one of the significant aspects that they have to tackle. Now, corruption also comes in when you talk of the economy, because you cannot talk of economic emancipation and you let go the issue of corruption. So their oversight role as a parliament is going to come in handy. Those portfolio committees, the culture that we saw at the end or at the close of the 8th Parliament has got to be continued. The culture of interrogating government businesses, the culture of interrogating tenders, the culture of interrogating even the decisions that ministers make, in order to ensure that whatever decisions they make are beneficial to the economic development agenda of the country, and they are also beneficial to the economic emancipation agenda of the country. And most importantly, that they work within the confines of the Constitution to ensure peace and security for the nation.
Mm-hmm. Subst, obviously you have issues that you want to see being talked about, being tackled in the 9th Parliament.
Well, I'll just continue in the line that my colleague has referred to.
Mm-hmm.
We are a member of the International Community of Nations,
yes,
and therefore we need to introspect and see what it is that drove our friends away. What can we do to, attract those friends again? Capital is a coward. We cannot pretend that everyone is falling over each other in order to invest in Zimbabwe. We need to address the factors that can, attract that investment.
Mm-hmm.
We also need to, examine all the pieces of legislation that have caused conflict in our country.
Yeah.
Those issues that stakeholders have continued to knock Parliament's doors about. What are those issues? And see if there's merit in stakeholder, submissions that we need this or that reform, and make decisions on what we can, what we should, and what we need to do as a country in order to move forward. We need to be part of the International Community of Nations if we are to develop, as the government has said, that we need to transform this economy into a middle-income economy. That takes a lot of issues, a lot of, introspection and reform.
Yes.
So we need to do quite a lot. The 9th Parliament has its hands full.
Yes. Introspection, reform. I just spoke about corruption, economic development. Now, are you happy with the number of parliamentarians we have in this country vis-a-vis the population or the size of the country? And also the structure of parliament where you have a bicameral system?
Well, that question is beyond me as an individual. What I like and what I do not like is neither here nor there. Zimbabweans in their generality said this is what we want. So what we need to focus on is what the parliament as an institution has to achieve within the time that it has to do, its work, the 5-year period. The number of committees, it has to make, effective committees, effective structures, effective systems that ensure that members can excel, members can discharge their duties functionally well. Questions, of course, are asked, how effective is a bicameral versus a unicameral parliament? But I think, that will be an academic exercise, because the people said in 2013 that is what we want. So we need to just ensure that we make this institution effective and so that it achieves what parliament must achieve within the 5-year lifespan that it has.
Mm-hmm. You agency, you seem to want to add on that.
No, I actually am concurring with my brother here, because at the end of the day, it is the will of the people that must take the day. it is the will of the people that they expressed through, you know, voting yes for this constitution that must be protected. And it is also the will of the people through the vote that they cast for their members of parliament who are now in parliament that must take the day. And the most important thing is for parliament to be able to execute the expectations of their constituents. The most important thing is for parliament to be able to execute their roles and their function and their duties as, you know, properly pronounced in our constitution. So the debate of whether we should have more or less parliamentarians is neither here nor there, and I think it's not significant for the phase and time that we are at as Zimbabwe. I think we should also commend the efforts of the previous authorities with the inclusion of the 60 women, the women quota that was properly provided for by the constitution. It also provides a gap that we have always known, the gap between the males and the females now, because it also brings forward women as people who are capable, people who has got the capacity to carry the vision of the country forward, and people who are also capable of debating and putting forward ideas, opinions and agendas that will benefit the well-being of the people of Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the gender issue, my concern with the ninth parliament is the representation of women. We have actually regressed, if you look at the eighth parliament, in terms of the percentage representation of women. Our commitment through SADC and other international instruments is to achieve gender parity. And the constitution also binds us to achieve gender parity. But in terms of the representation of women, we have not been able to do that. The SADC gender protocol enjoined us to achieve gender parity by 2015. And we are still far off the mark. And it's a sad indictment for all the political parties that contested this this recent election.
Yeah.
They've not been, you know, serious in terms of addressing the issue of gender parity. This parliament may need to put that issue on the table to say, how do we achieve what the constitution says in terms of gender representation and other issues around diversity?
Yes.
Because the gender dimension is also reflected even in the cabinet appointments, because there was less female representation across the board, across all political parties in the National Assembly and therefore in the Senate, and you see a bit of that also in other aspects of human endeavor in Zimbabwe, and that's an issue that I submit must be addressed by this parliament within the 5-year period that it has.
It's Ask the MP, and we have tonight in the studio Southern African Parliamentary Support Trust Program Advisor Philip Muziri, and also a legal practitioner, Agency Gumbo. We want to take a short break. When we come back, we'll look at the questions that you listeners are sending in. Contributions on our WhatsApp. And let me also remind that our WhatsApp number is 0731 168 045, for those who want to be sending in their comments, contributions or questions insofar as ninth parliament is concerned, and also look at the expectations that you have for the ninth parliament.
MP will be right back after these messages. Ask the MP by sending your questions via Facebook, which is facebook.com/ZFM Stereo, or Twitter at ZFM Stereo, or SMS, call, or WhatsApp on 0772-168-045.
Welcome back to Ask the MP. Perfect Shlongwane is my name, ZFM Stereo is the station, and we are discussing expectations of the ninth parliament, what you have in mind, what you think needs to be dealt with, what you think the eighth parliament did not achieve, that the ninth parliament should also focus on. And our number is 0731 168 045, for those who want to send in their questions, contributions, and vanoda kuti vange vachitumira kuti tifambe pamwe in this program. As we continue with this program, let me ask you this question from a listener. The question says, who is the deputy speaker of parliament, the president of senate, and the deputy? Ndibaba Comfort varikubvunza vanhu zvoti, from the elections that were conducted today, who became deputy speaker?
Well, is that mine? It's his.
The deputy speaker of parliament is Mike Nyambuya.
National Assembly.
Yes, National Assembly.
National Assembly is Tsitsi.
Yes.
Honorable Tsitsi Gezi. That's the National Assembly. Deputy Speaker.
Uh-huh. And the Speaker is Honorable Advocate Mdenda. Now, Senate, kwa kamira say ku Senate?
My understanding, because this was work in progress later in the day, that Honorable Chinomona won the Senate seat. Then the deputy must be retired General Mike Nyambuya.
Now, someone here says, where is that question? Okay, I'll read that question. But let's move on. What role should Parliament play in the drive towards sustainable economic growth? I will start with you, agents. The role that Parliament must play to drive economic growth sustainably.
Right. I think the greatest role in that regard is that of their oversight. Because you notice that economic development in a country really depends or hinges upon the strength and accountability of its various institutions. And as the Constitution clearly says that all these institutions must then become accountable to Parliament, it means that right there, indirectly, Parliament is given a big brother role to all these institutions to ensure that the agenda that is set out as the development agenda of the country is fulfilled and there is no lagging behind, there is no incompetence, there is no corruption. So the parliamentary portfolio committees must be seen coming in and acting on the various ministries that or on the various institutions that fall right under their portfolio to ensure that whoever is given the role to lead such institutions is, accountable, number one, and there's deliverables that even the parliament itself will come and monitor and say, look, what have you done for this period of time? I think now it should be the time that parliamentary portfolio committees sit on a more regular basis to ensure that at every given time, there is something that they are monitoring, there's something that they are also, even issues to do with the budget itself, to see that Parliament has got to be very hands-on in as far as the priority set up of the budget that we are going to have, particularly in 2019 now. Mm-hmm. The budget is going to be announced very soon. Yep. We need to see Parliament taking an active role in going back to their communities, parliamentarians going back to their constituencies, consulting their constituents, and coming back to Parliament and giving positive feedback as far as how the budget itself must be structured and the priority areas of the budget that will be announced.
Very critical. Is this happening where parliamentarians go back to the constituencies, to the people, to say a budget so that they also have input?
They do. Speaking of the budget, there's what they call the re-engineered budget process, in terms of which stakeholders must be involved at every phase of the budget cycle. And it's a matter that everyone must have an interest in terms of ensuring that at the initiation stage, in terms of formulation of the government policy in respect of the budget, members of parliament are involved, they interrogate the process, and they give feedback to their stakeholders. Mm-hmm. When the actual budget is then crafted, they also take part in that process, interrogate it, and also give feedback to their stakeholders. Members of this particular parliament must be more critical in terms of
interrogating government policy, because it's the prerogative of the executive to actually craft the policy that shapes the direction the country takes in terms of its development trajectory. But it is the duty of parliament to interrogate that policy to ensure that it actually matches the direction that they want to take. If Parliament fails in that regard and fails to give feedback to their stakeholders, then they'll be remiss in their obligations as an institution.
Yes. We have a contribution here from Hillary. He says, I want to see the Parliament tracking down on the $15 billion which disappeared under the previous cabinet or administration. The Minister of Sports to develop sports at a grassroots level. Finance Minister to cut down on government spending. He also says, how much does this parliament, he actually uses the word bloated, parliament and Senate cost the taxpayer money? I think this is very, very significant to talk about. Anyway, let's look at issues around CDF. I know at one point parliamentarians were given that money to make sure that there is development in their constituencies, respective constituencies. Now, nyaya corruption, and we saw pakaita abuse in some instances. Yemarioyo isinga indi kwanga chifanira kuti inge chienda. What do you think should be done to make sure that there are safety nets? Yekuti marioyo, if it's released, aizo pedzisiriya isina kuenda kwainofanira.
Well, chakakonzeresa izvozvo ndechekuti roles and functions were, you know, sort of modified. We said at the onset, could maros a parliament ndakati akati akati. When you then give members money, kuti endai munospenda in your constituencies, passing a legal framework to regulate that entire process, you create a situation where there is potential for abuse of public resources. The role of members is not developmental. Members oversee developmental policies implemented by the executive through the national policy called the budget.
Yeah.
So if you then say my members are also to run developmental projects themselves using public resources without creating the necessary legal framework, you create potential for problems. And government resources are utilized in terms of an established legal framework, Treasury instructions, the finance, Public Finance and Management Act, which do not seem to apply in terms of, you know, constituency development fund. That's why you had those problems. We need to ask ourselves, do we want members to be running a parallel budget when the executive are running the national budget, and then see how it works? That model was actually taken from such jurisdictions as India, where members have a sort of a budget that is directed towards their constituencies. But I'm certain that in those jurisdictions, they have a watertight legal framework to ensure that public resources are not put to waste. And we did not do a sufficient background work before that money was created as a constituency development fund. That's why we saw the problems that we saw. We saw that coming when we gave members that money.
Agency.
Yeah, well, very true about the legal framework not existing that supported or that ensured the proper usage of the constituency development fund. So, you know, it was more like giving the MP pocket money. Kuti omari shangmari dzogera kuchi ku constituency uno develop, but there were no structures that were put in place by government itself to ensure that the spending of this constituency development fund was monitored, and it also to ensure that it adhered to a particular set budget for its constituency. But nonetheless, it's not all MPs who abused and manipulated this constituency development fund. So we also need to mention that there were certain individuals that set what I can call a precedent in as far as how to manage the constituency development fund, because we saw some of the good MPs would go back and invest this money into their constituency development office, which was basically a body that was meant to execute the developmental agenda of the MP in that particular constituency. Because remember, when these MPs come to us, it is myself, people like myself and my brother here who properly understand the distinct role of parliament.
Mm.
But the people that the MPs go to, even the MPs themselves, they misrepresent that which they are supposed to be doing for the people that vote for them.
Do they understand what they're supposed
because
to do?
Because they go there and say, you know, I will make sure there's a bridge here, I will build a road for you here, and they forget that they are now overstepping into other or into the executive function of government, whereas their role is really to oversee policy and to ensure that there is legislative reform in the country and the like. As Ivanu, you know, they don't understand that. They want their MP to come and ensure that Mapotos are Varwa and the like. Mm-hmm, so we had certain MPs who knew that there was a mandate that they promised to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And with this financing, the Constituent Development Fund, they would go back to the people and ensure that whatever promise they made, if there's a bridge that needed to be built, the money is dedicated towards that. Though that is a function of the executive, they will still do that. So, yes, the most important thing, though, we can never run away from, and for future purposes, that there needs to be a legal framework that regulates and manages the disbursement and usage and accounting of the Constituency Development Fund. Otherwise, it would be mere pocket money in some greedy MPs' pockets.
Munombo ita my workshops with parliamentarians, and where you teach them, inform them, and do you think they have an understanding of what it is they're supposed to be doing?
Well, we actually supplement the work that Parliament itself does. You will notice that after the elections that were conducted today, Parliament adjourned to a future date, I believe the 18th or so of this month. What happens during this period is members are taken through the paces, because we have a high turnover rate in terms of every election. So there's a preponderance of new MPs in ninth parliament. So in consequence, parliament takes them through the paces. What are your roles? What are your functions? What is expected of you? And we supplement that by also making endeavors to build the capacity of members in terms of what is expected of them. And beyond the members, we also make endeavors to build the capacity of members of the public and civil society to ensure that they also know what the roles and functions of parliament are, so that when this information is shared across the board, it helps to ensure that we do not expect members to perform functions that are beyond their mandate as parliamentarians, and therefore we color our expectations in accordance to what the constitution provides. Mm-hmm. We do not expect them to build bridges and to be at every funeral and so on. We expect them to discharge the functions that are mandated by the constitution. Mm-hmm. So those are things that we attempt to do. There are always challenges in terms of funding and so on. But the state also has an obligation to ensure that people know this constitution. I think it's section 6 or so, which actually says the state must ensure that there's public awareness of this constitution. And we hope that in the next financial cycle of the state, they'll make provision for that public awareness, so that politicians do not promise to build a bridge where there's no river.
Okay, for those who want to send in their questions or who want to send in their expectations for the 9th Parliament, the WhatsApp number is 0731168045. Tonight's program is discussing expectations on the 9th Parliament, yakabva kugadzwa mazuva mashoma nene apfura. Today, they were electing Speaker of Parliament and President of the Senate. Now, Earlier we spoke about involvement in parliament in issues to do with the budget. What is required to ensure that national budgetary projections, allocations and implementation meet the priority sectors which drive the economy?
Well, when they do the crafting of the budget, Parliament and the executive actually meet. There's a pre-budget seminar where they discuss what the executive's priorities are in terms of the policy direction that they want to take. They'll share with Parliament, this is what we want to achieve in the next 12 months, and these are our priorities. So when the budget is eventually crafted, Parliament also go through that budget and look at the numbers and say and interrogate whether the numbers match the policies that the executive have said these are our priorities. So during the course of the implementation of that budget, Parliament must then track to see if the numbers and the conduct on the ground in terms of the implementation of the budget are matching. Are the numbers matching what the executive sought out to do? And budget tracking helps Parliament to ensure that the policy beacons that the executive have set are the direction that the executive are going towards.
Yeah.
And the entire budget cycle ensures that members can keep track of what is happening. Members of the executive report on a regular basis in terms of the Public Finance and Management Act.
Yeah.
They are required to report on a quarterly basis. So Parliament can track the extent to which the executive are still within the budget in terms of the framework that they set for the financial year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I have also another contribution here from a listener who says, in as much as we're discussing the important issues pertaining to Parliament and parliamentarians, I have a question. Does the government have a financial mark for an individual to be part of Parliament? And he explains, he says, in the sense that before an individual is put to represent the people, he or she must have a certain amount in his bank account or her bank account so that corruption and frivolous usage of development funds is minimized.
But they really look. I understand the moral argument.
Yes,
behind the listener's contribution.
Yeah,
I think it really makes sense if we are to look at it and think into making it some form of a law in the future. But as of now, there is no monetary restriction for who can run for parliament. In fact, the constitution guarantees it as a right that a person has got a right to vote and also has a right to be voted for as long as they satisfy set requirements. And the only really restricting requirement that we have in the constitution for one to be elected as a member of parliament is that is the age restriction.
Age,
the moment you are 21 years old of age, you can be elected as a member of parliament. So the financial element, though I understand the reasoning and the argument, because you want to avoid to have people that get into office to represent you,
but
at the same time, they have got to fill up their pockets first.
Mm-hmm.
Because, they are human beings. We are human beings. So we are human beings. So the moment I'm at a place where I have access to resources, the first priority normally is myself.
Mm-hmm.
So the argument there makes sense in that it requires certain individuals who go into public office with the heart of serving the people that elected them into office. And I think it's a debate and a discourse that must continue among Zimbabweans, and that we must ensure it becomes law sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you.
I think one of the defining factors of any democracy is the extent to which it includes or excludes its citizens. Once we determine that only the rich should be in leadership positions, then we exclude the majority of the people. That does not take into account the diversity of our population, and that is why in 2013 we said anyone can contest for public office. And I think that's a fairer way of looking at
And the only restriction is age.
Yes, age and citizenship yes, and, you know, the registration requirement that you must be a registered voter. So I think that's a more fairer way of, you know, determining who leads
who
us.
Okay, as we're wrapping up, I'll start with you, Mr. Muziri. What would you say, or what is your list, so that the listener at home is able to pick up? What is your list of things that you think the Ninth Parliament should deal with?
My colleague spoke about the economy. We need to address the economy. The army of the unemployed on our streets is a ticking time bomb. We need to address how we relate to other countries, both regionally and internationally. You know, that also speaks to issues of how investors look at us as a country. I think all of us sometimes, you know, get to be asked when we travel abroad, what is the, you know, state of the situation in your country and so on. And I think we need to address that. What could make investors uneasy about Zimbabwe? I'm sure part of that relates to the legal framework that we have in place. We need to address that. We need to address a lot of other things. You know, a lot of stakeholders raised a number of conflict points in terms of not only the electoral field, but other aspects of our legal framework that may have problems being consistent with the constitution. We need to put all those things behind us and move on and move forward as a country.
Agency ta kushika ku mapeto, but before I also ask you to give me a list of what you want this parliament to deal with, there's a listener here who says izvozvozve kusada kuisa mutemo wekuti munhu aite declare assets. Zvinongoratidza kuti we are not serious about curbing corruption. But you spoke about then excluding the majority if that is done, then zvinokanganisa issue ye democracy. Agency, you want to say something?
Yeah, I want to say something with regards to that. I think there's a difference between excluding people on the basis of their financial position and the requirement for every public office holder to declare assets, because the declaration of assets assists the monitoring mechanism of parliament itself, monitoring mechanism of the government, and even public monitoring mechanisms, because we know when you get into office, if you have one car, and we know what salary, because the salary that you get as an MP, we know it.
It's
of public knowledge. There's reason for people to want to interrogate how you got. We're not saying you cannot get 10 cars as a parliamentarian, but we are saying that as long as we know how much you had when you got in, it's easier for us to interrogate and investigate how you got the rest when during the period of your term. So the issue of declaration of assets is an internationally recognized standard, and we need to uphold that as a nation, so that we know that our public office holders are not there in order to amass wealth for themselves, but they are there to do exactly what is required by the title of their job, public servants.
Right, your list.
Well, I think the first thing that I think Parliament should do is to create monitoring mechanism. And I'm talking of both the legal framework and even the political will to do so.
Yeah.
To understand that for our country to move forward in as far as the economy is concerned, we've got to be able to have checks and balances that are strict and that are very loyal to the constitution more than they are loyal to the various political parties. I think there is also need for parliament to look into the investment laws of the country. There's need to for parliament to look into the property laws of the country. There are concerns that have been raised by various players, international players, in as far as investing in Zimbabwe is concerned, and for us to be able to protect not just foreign direct investment but also to protect you know, indigenous investment, there needs to be strict security around issues to do with title, land title. That needs to be addressed. The land issue has got to be addressed. Parliament has got to you know, embark on a aggressive land audit exercise to ensure that even Vaneminta Yagawanda Wanda, it's curtailed, and things are put to their best use, that is to develop the economy of the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me at this time take this opportunity to thank Mr. Philip Muziri, the program advisor, Southern African Parliamentary Support Trust, who was with us in tonight's program. And also to thank Agency Gumbo, a lawyer who also managed to come to the program. This program is brought to you by ZFM in conjunction with Southern African Parliamentary Support Trust. My name is Perfect Hlongwane, standing in for Farai Makutoya. We call it good evening.
Ask the MP by sending your questions via Facebook, which is facebook.com/ZFM Stereo, or Twitter at ZFM Stereo, or SMS, call, or WhatsApp on 0772 168 045.